El Pasoans got a first look earlier this week at a new feature film that explores the life and legend of a musician who died before his talents were fully recognized. I'm Charles Horak, and you're listening to On Film. The new film, Blaze, from co-writer and director Ethan Hawke, stars musician and first-time actor Ben Dickey as the country blues musician Blaze Foley. Blaze is a masterfully made musical biopic and so much more. Heartwarming and heartbreaking in equal measure, Blaze evocatively recreates the intimate milieu of the indie music scene of the 1970s and 80s and reveals layers of rich detail of an aspiring singer-songwriter trying to navigate life, art, and love to create a legend. The film opened this week in El Paso, and I'm happy to have Ethan Hawke and Ben Dickey on the program today. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning. How do you do?
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for coming to the studio. You've been on a crazy tour of Texas with this film, almost every day another city. Is that right?
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we've kind of done the big circle twice.
Right.
You know, Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, El Paso, San Antonio.
Well, we appreciate you getting
Austin,
out here to El Paso.
Right. Yeah, of course.
Austin, of
course.
Yeah. And this film was largely made in Texas?
No, it was made about Texas and pretended to be in Texas.
Right.
Unfortunately.
Movie magic.
Well, this is a call to write your congressman because we really wanted to shoot here. And I, of all people, you know, because of my friendship with Richard Linklater, it would have been really easy for me to make it in Austin where Blaze lived and died and worked. But kickbacks in Louisiana, either side of the border, New Mexico or Louisiana, they're so much more film friendly,
right,
that we had to hop over there.
Yeah. Well, you can't really tell. It looks like the hill country often in the film. For those listeners, most of them, and including myself, who are not musicologists like the two of you, Blaze Foley was not a name I was aware of, really, before I saw your film. Pretty obscure guy, died in the 80s. What was it about this story and his life that made you want to devote so much time and energy to making a feature?
People often try to apologize to Ben and I that they didn't know who Blaze was, and there's really no apology necessary. That's part of the reason to make the movie. Ben's heard me say this, but I think something that, as a person who loves music movies, I love them. I always go. It doesn't matter if I hear they're good or bad. I really love them. And the problem is most of them are always about famous musicians. Mm-hmm. It's just this kind of subtextual lie that it tells you that this person is of value because they were famous, right?
Interesting.
And I had this idea that what made Blaze's story so remarkable is it's more like, as dramatic as it is, it's more like most musicians' experience with their art being met with indifference.
You know?
You work at a high level, you have moments of grace, and you have enough moments of grace to keep you hunting, but mostly the world actually doesn't care. Mostly they, whatever year you're living in, there's some popular music that is usurping. Is the tip of the spear, you know.
And they're driven by something more than seeking fame or
they
success.
They have to be. I mean, everybody wants to reach an audience. You don't make art to not communicate. You make art to communicate. The problem is, what part of yourself do you give the reins to, right? The part of you that wants to be the center of attention or the part of you that wants to communicate something substantive? And I think you could make a case to be made that people like Blaze Foley or Townes Van Zandt or Guy Clark or had a desire to reach people. They just didn't give the reins to that aspect of their personality.
Mm-hmm. Ben, you were brought onto this or asked to play Blaze Foley. We spoke last week when you were in town, and you have never acted in a film before,
right,
but
yeah.
You are a performer. You're a musician yourself, which I guess was a prerequisite of this character to be able to sing and play the guitar. But you really have to shoulder a lot of the weight of this film. Did you have trepidation going into this?
Well, sure. I mean, I was, you know, unbelievably nervous about doing it. Ethan has said to me in the past, he's like, you know, you might really like acting. You might be into it. And I've always just, no, I doubt it. You know, when he was making Magnificent Seven, we went out and had late night drinks and we went home and we were just talking about being on stage, just what it was like to be on stage, what it meant to be on stage and perform. And, you know, I was just waxing poetic about how, well, just I know how to communicate musically. That's what I know how to do, and I don't have any interest otherwise. And if I did, I would think that I would need a lot of time to, like, workshop and focus and learn. And music was really enough for me. That was all I wanted to do.
I was trying to say, don't you want to be in Magnificent Seven? He's like, I'd like to play the rap party, you know?
Right, exactly. I mean, it was fun being around everybody. You know, it dawned on me, there was a rainout day when they were making that movie, and everybody was in their cowboy gear, and so we went on link to his trailer, and everybody's in their gear, you know, and I was wearing, like, you know, shorts and a t-shirt, and we were drinking tequila, and I was like, wait a minute, everybody's getting paid, and they look badass. This might be
I want to be an actor.
Yeah, right.
But we should back up and say that you two have been friends for much longer than this production has been production.
Yeah. There's a funny thing people often ask Ben, like, about getting cast in the movie or something, and people almost don't believe it. I've never felt so called to a project. Mm-hmm. There was no...
I wanted to ask you about that.
There was no making the movie without Ben. You know, the idea of the movie came out of our friendship. And it strangely spoke to both of us in a way that was powerful. I mean, my feelings about art and life and... Or Blaze's life is a perfect story. And for Ben, Ben's from Arkansas. Ben's a storyteller. He's a joke teller. He's a cook. He's a poet. He's an interesting person to talk to at any hour of the day. And so it was a kind of, Blaze visited us in a way as this opportunity to share. Both of us had, it was a meeting ground.
Mm-hmm. Were you concerned at some point that once you put a camera on that, it somehow goes away or
I was definitely
vaporizes.
Concerned. Okay. It seemed like a really good idea. It seemed really cool. And we started doing it. And
it sounds like a middle of the night idea.
Yeah, it is a middle of the night idea.
New Year's
and as
Eve
it got
idea.
Deeper and deeper and deeper and closer, Ben got more nervous and I got more nervous. I mean, you know, because when you start bringing in other people, I'm going to get this great DP and the DP flies in, you know, and you're going to get this, Christofferson's going to play this or this. Okay, hey, we got Alia Shawkat. She's going to, okay.
It's all happening.
It's all, and everybody starts, a movie is a strange, it's like a hive, you know, that come. It starts as one little cell you're building, which is Ben and I and our respective wives. You know, Beth was the art director. My wife was the producer. So we were there first, the four of us.
Right.
And then...
You're letting people into that.
And then people start coming in, and the hive gets bigger. And then it gets more nerve-wracking. And the more I believed in it, the more money we needed. Then the more, like, then you're like, okay, wait, actually, this is getting scary. I got four kids. And it was strange. Remember, right before it started, Ben got... like the flu or something. And it was Sybil who I said, wow, this is really nerve-wracking, man. This is a really intense experience. And Sybil, who's our co-writer, it's also her story. She's a spirit guide of sorts. She was really, funnily enough, she is an actor and she could really help Ben. She's not just a person who the movie's about. She's a writer and she's an actress. And she could help Ben think about it the right way. And I said, well, how do you think he's doing? And she said, oh, he's doing great. I said, I wish he wasn't sick. And she goes, no, it's right. If you're going to do something big, significant, I mean, if you're going to dig deep, it's almost shamanistic acting at its best. Often you'll hear people get sick before a part or after a part, sometimes both.
Yeah.
And if you're really inviting something into your spirit, into your, you know, actors deal in emotional currency, right? Your spirit life, your emotional life, that's your currency. And you have it to give, it's okay, but it does cost something, you know, and it was very scary.
There's a lot of spirit in this film, and even spirituality is brought up multiple times, which you often don't see in contemporary films. And I'm just curious, though, you're not just trying to be have fidelity to a story for an audience, but fidelity to people who actually existed. Charlie Sexton, we should mention, is in the film, who's playing Towns Van Zandt, who's no longer with us. Alia Shawkat, your co-writer, who's playing Sybil Rosen, your co-writer in the film.
Sybil, so you have Rosen, all of, played her mom.
All of these people who, you know, knew the characters intimately. And you have to do justice to that, Ben. So do you choose sometimes to do justice to that or to the script or to somewhere in the middle?
Well, the gig was this. The gig for me, the way I looked at it was I was given the opportunity to stand up for Blaze Foley when he couldn't stand up for himself. And a lot of different musicians can't stand up for themselves. I take music very seriously. It's how I breathe in the world, the rhythms of being alive to me are musical, the way that these celestial bodies move around. The sun is musical to me. It's all musical to me. So the opportunity to stand up for Blaze, I knew musically I could handle. That was a safety raft for me in that regard. So I was going to cling to that pretty heavy. And the preparation for becoming Blaze was started with the music. And then it grew into a relationship and friendship with Sybil Rosen that grew into a friendship and a relationship with Alia Shawkat and Josh Hamilton and Charlie Sexton. And by the time that Ethan, as he always would say, got the ship out of the bay and we were moving on the water, everyone knew the purpose of why we were there. It didn't change my nerves. It didn't change my perception of the risks that he was taking and the risks that I was taking. But the opportunity still stood clear that I could stand up for Blaze and Charlie would stand up for Towns and that Alia would be this lovely person in the world who loved a man who was really complicated and was really talented and was oftentimes a sweetheart and oftentimes a monster. But the humanity that existed within all of that was what life is all about for me. And making creative journeys with your good friends is an incredible opportunity, and it's awful fun and awful risky too. You know, Ethan sat me down before we made this movie and said, I want to have a one-on-one meeting with you, because we've been having all these very serious meetings with DPs and producers and like money talk and this and that. And he said, listen, before we go forward, you and I are good friends, right? Yeah. And we're going to be good friends when we make the movie, right? Right. And we're going to be good friends after, no matter what happens, right? Mm-hmm. And that happened. And that means the world to me. And, you know, it was a funny feeling in March of 2017 when he started editing the film. It dawned on me that we'd made a film.
All those little pieces of time add up to something.
It's just that the experience was so unbelievable and transforming and... It was a gift, and it was hard, and it hurt, and it wasn't easy to let go of, but that's living, and that's what we do here.
You mentioned earlier you're trying to make a different kind of biopic, and I think one of the things you did to that end was it's unresolved completely who this person is. You allow us different perspectives on him through different characters who see him differently given their circumstances or their connections or their relationships, which is much more like life. That, and particularly in a two-hour movie, I think one of the failures of most biopics, musical biopics, is that they give us this homogenized version of this is the key to understanding this person. And you give us multiple keys in the case of Blaze Foley.
Yeah, it's really true. I mean, what you just said is something that... there's something that feels just false to me when I hear that, oh, she became a great songwriter because her little sister died. Like, well... okay, lots of people have lost and they didn't become, you know, a country western legend or whatever it is, or he was this because his father beat him, or she was that because of this. Our lives are so mysterious. Mm-hmm. And people, when I was making the movie, I would be haunted by this idea of like, well, okay, let's start with why did Blaze, as Ben says, torpedo his own fleet? Why did Blaze self-destruct? When I would ask myself, well, why did my friends, I've had friends self-destruct, hardcore, dead on the street like this. Why? I was friends with them. I really don't know. You can look to God. You can look to your inner self. You can sit in quiet. And there is this deep mystery running through life. And I thought, you know what my answer to that question is going to be? I'm going to have Ben tell some record executives a joke. Because, and it's a weird joke, it's a joke that's not really funny. It's a joke I'd heard Ben tell in Canada at a Hootenanny one night about a songbird that dies. You know?
I love this scene.
And in a way, look, at that moment, he has everything. He has guys who have a Rolls Royce and a Porsche and a Ferrari believing in him, ready to take him on a tour. And the end of that tour, he threw a party so big for homeless people that it bankrupted Zephyr Records, right? Why? You know, and there's just no good answer. Yes, he was hunting for authenticity. That's a nice way of seeing it. He was allergic to the superficial aspects of our profession. Maybe he was nervous he wasn't good enough. Maybe he's an alcoholic. Maybe all of the above. So I feel like for a piece of art to try to put its finger on why some of the best of us, no sooner do we get what we dream of that we turn it into something negative. It happens so often. And oftentimes, the seeking of what we want is the best part of it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we all hear that.
I'm glad you used the term haunted, because there are moments in this film that are haunting. There's a beautiful section of the film in which he and his romantic partner are holed up in a house in the woods, basically, in Georgia. And it's not, looking back on it, the way you shoot it and the way the house is designed, it's not a house per se. It's the memory of a house. There are elements of a house to it, just enough to make it a home that they habitate. And it, so much of this film is about memory and time and how our perspective changes with it and grows fuzzy.
Yeah.
And how all of that kind of gets out of order too. The film is shot and lays out in multiple memories and different time frames. And the whole thing just has this beautiful flow to it that is a testament, I think, to your vision, but also you're working with your editor. It really carries you.
One of the things that was really hard about the movie was it starts with this big gamble of saying, all right, I'm going to cast musicians as musicians. Mm-hmm. So one thing we're going to get right is this movie is going to have something to say about being a musician. There's a good 40 years of research between Ben and Charlie in playing the blues, right? So I've got that on set with me every day. What I don't have is a tremendous amount of experience acting, right? I possess that. So I can help. I cast Alia, who comes at acting very much the way I do. She's a child actor who's growing up. You see her watercoloring. You see her singing. I understand her, and she understands me. And Josh Hamilton, who is my theater partner, point is that we're in the DNA of this project. I had some get-out-of-jail-free cards, like if Ben and Charlie struggled. And I also kind of overwrote and gave them a tremendous amount of freedom to write and contribute. Now, the problem is, then I had this huge collage, tapestry, blues song. Mm-hmm. I mean, also, meanwhile, I fell totally madly in love with Blaze Foley.
Right.
So I now want every song he ever wrote has to be in the movie. I can't leave it. I can't cut that song. I can't cut that song. And the way it's structured is the plot, whatever, as it was, the narrative devices are connected to the music. Mm-hmm. I was using the music as these kind of horcruxes, as these kind of time portals. Mm-hmm. And so the editor and I had to dig really, really deep. His name is Jason Gershon, and with ourselves about what we were trying to communicate. You know, there's like a couple times in the movie where the movie just stops and Ben or Charlie tells a joke. He's like, why did you think this was so important on set? And I would sit in the editing room and I'd say, well, this is why it's important. This is why. And he would listen to me and go, okay, you're right. That has to be in the movie. Okay, why did this? Well, that because the sunset was really nice and it was really cool, didn't it? And that looked really neat. He's like, yeah, okay, lose it. It ultimately, strangely, looks and feels exactly like the way Ben and I first talked about it. Yeah. It was a long way back to the beginning. Mm-hmm.
You got back to that initial inspiration.
Yeah.
So Ben, was there a moment where the actor in Ethan, you know, directing you, did he give you a lot of latitude, or did he give you notes?
Well, he
you guys
tricked
have some
me
side
to begin
conversations.
He did a trick that was, he says it was a move that he was familiar with, but in the 11th hour before we started shooting. First of all, we did a camera test that turned out not to be a camera test, but that was about Alia and I, and she, you know, really picked me up in that regard. But he threw at me this big giant monologue in the 11th hour that was going to be Blaze. If you could imagine Blaze in like the height of his most sober kind of controlled musing about John Lennon talking about saying that the Beatles are bigger than Christ, and Blaze being finding that extremely exciting as a young man, and then John Lennon apologizing for it. And he wanted me to talk for like, you know, 4.5 minutes nonstop about this subject matter. And I didn't have time to rehearse. I'd been steeped in rehearsing all the other crazy monologues that I had in the first 3 days of shooting. And the last second, you know, he was like, no, I need you to do this. And you think you can handle it? And, you know, I didn't want to be like, no, I can't. I just was like, yeah, sure. So what he gave me permission to do in that is like, you don't have to say all this word for word, but I need you to say most of it, and we need to make it flow and move. So he threw me to tigers, And I'm a musician and a performer. I don't get scared if I don't know the song, but I am going to fill in gaps where I don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. So it was a funny little exercise, and I felt like I was on fire, and I felt like everyone was watching me going, geez, oh, Pete, what is Ethan doing with this guy? And it was really vulnerable feeling. And as we ended that day, I thought, man, that was awful. And it felt awful. But what he had done was set me on fire with no intention of putting that in the movie. Uh-huh. And then the next 3 days were actually my hardest days, but that's what I had prepared for, and that's what I felt. So I was going back toward that, like, well, I'm going to take care of this couple of days, man, because yesterday was a nightmare. and the crew
directing tricks,
felt that happen.
They're coaching tricks. Mm. You got to have a preseason game, right, where you get your jitters out, and you need it to be a preseason game, and you need to do something hard before you'll stop being nervous. You're going to be nervous until you're tested, right? But you passed through a fire that day. And then actually everything else was easier than that. And then we were getting deeper into Blaze, and the nerves were gone. And you also have to fail in front of your friends. He didn't want to let me down. I didn't want to let him down.
Right.
But we were going to have to let each other down on some peculiar Wednesday by, you know, eventually life, you got to live it, right? And nothing's going to go perfect. And that has to be okay.
Yeah, for sure.
Which is why you guys made the pact that to be friends through it all.
And in regards to him being an actor and what he shows me, I've been watching him for years. I've been watching him on stage. I watched his preparation. And he sets an example. And I watched him work on big movies like Magnificent Seven. I watched him move on smaller movies. And he's, you know, he takes himself seriously in the preparation for it. He wants to be free when that stuff starts.
Right.
And when I say free, I mean free with all the opportunities that life has in moments when you visit with other people.
You got to have that foundation before you freeform it.
Exactly.
I wanted to wrap up by asking you to, a lot of this film is about the struggle of bringing art into the world and sometimes meeting an indifferent audience. But Townes Van Zandt, there's a moment where he's telling Blaze Foley where you've got to give up everything. You've got to burn your relationships and your family. And it seems to me, what little I've talked to you both, you have really rich, creative lives. You have families. You have kids. You seem to have a different paradigm for your life. Mm-hmm. How do you manage that? Does the creativity make all that work instead of being a negative?
It's such an interesting conversation. I think a lot of people go into the arts are often confused when you start hearing about the behavior of Pablo Picasso or the behavior of Jimi Hendrix or whatever.
Indulgence.
And I remember seeing that interview as a young man and being really, really haunted by it because, Robert Frost doesn't have anything on Townes Van Zandt, he's a major, major poet. And I really believed in him. And I was struck to my core that maybe I was a phony because I wanted to be happy.
Right.
And it was a very interesting thing. As the writer in me, I'm not talking about a historian now, but the writer in me, when I read Sybil's book and I realized that the last time they saw each other is a 3-day window of which he met Townes Van Zandt. Had to mean the world to him to meet mm-hmm. Townes Van Zandt. You got this major love of your life you're rekindling and you're meeting your hero. And it's an intersection. It allowed me to talk about an intersection that I believe in, which is this well of creativity that comes from children and sunshine and flowers and things that when you're in a dark place you think are corny. But there's another dark well, and there's a well where self-destruction, self-laceration, self-hatred, self-importance, they all live there. And that well is extremely creative too. And the movie Blaze's life allowed us to make a movie about that question, And so in a way that I always envisioned that moment where Blaze is listening to Townes play Marie, the camera just sits on Blaze watching him. What do you think when you watch art at that level? You think, how can I be a part of that?
Sure.
It's a Faustian bargain.
you know, I think you just articulated for me part of what has attracted me so much to this film is that it is not just about Blaze Foley. It is certainly about him, and it's a remarkable character that Ben brings to life. But the film has so many other layers to it, and it's talking about art with a big A and big spiritual questions about how we live and how we treat each other. So kudos to you both for bringing this project to fruition, and I really appreciate you coming into the studio today.
Appreciate you having us. Thanks so much.
I've been discussing the new film Blaze about the life and legend of country blues musician Blaze Foley with the film's co-writer and director Ethan Hawke and actor Ben Dickey. Blaze is screening at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema, and you can find tickets and info online at drafthouse.com. An extended version of this conversation is available online at ktep.org. On Film's producer is Lauren Terrazas. I'm Charles Horak. Thank you for listening to On Film.